Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's event. And hello, Rachel. Thank you for joining me here. It's
Hi.
nice to see you. Go ahead, say something again so I can see how you sound.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Okay, that's very good. Okay, so we have an hour together today to explore Rachel's recently released book called Realize Your Dreams Through Journaling. And I'm excited to introduce you to the book and introduce you to Rachel and give her the chance to say a little bit about the book that she's created. But before we dive into the book, I just wanted to connect this a little bit to the topic of reality shifting that I had introduced on New Year's Day, because I see this as a continuation of that exploration. So I know some of you are aware of the talk I gave on New Year's Day. Others of you might not, but might not be. But what I talked about is this phenomena of reality shifting, and specifically saying that it would be a central focus of my own spiritual work this year, because it's something I'm becoming increasingly fascinated by. And so Rachel's book falls perfectly into that interest of mine. So to set a little context, reality shifting is an idea not always under that exact term that's been around for at least 100 years or so, a little bit longer. But the idea is that you can create dramatic change in your life. And it's dramatic in the sense that it has very mysterious chain of cause and effect. You know, we all change reality all the time, but normally we do it in ways that we can really see how it's happening. So let's say I want to build a house. Well, I've changed reality. I started with an empty parking lot or an empty lot, and I built a house, and now there's a house. So it's a different reality. But I did it through very obvious chains of cause and effect. I maybe bought materials or hired a carpenter, or you do one step after another and you get it done. And most of what we do in life are things like that. We make a plan, a strategy, we follow it, and by applying effort over time, we enact change. This idea of reality shifting is a way of creating change in your life without using the normal means of cause and effect. And that's what we're going to speak about with Rachel today. What is reality shifting? How does it work? And specifically, how does it work in terms of the journaling exercises that she writes about in her book? This is all the domain that we'll be exploring. The reason I got excited to do this book and to publish this book, I didn't really do anything for it. It's Rachel's book. I just published it, but I wanted to publish it and I encouraged her to write it. I've known Rachel for about a decade. And from fairly early on, she has at different points shared with me her enthusiasm for this particular modality of transformation and talked to me about ways that she uses it, ways that she has used it in her life. And what to me is so intriguing is I could see by the results that she experiences in her life that it really works. For her, it really worked. Rachel has an amazing life. She has a beautiful family. She's a private jet pilot. She's always all over the place. The last time we talked preparing for this, she was in Jamaica. And she's living the life of her dreams. And she created it in large part through the kinds of techniques we'll be speaking about today and that she wrote about in her book. So I find this fascinating because these These techniques are so simple and they're so effective. But of course, we all know they aren't always effective for everyone. And so part of what we'll be talking about today is what makes them effective. How do you engage with these techniques in a way that makes them work? So that's the introduction. That's the broad context for our conversation today. And I would like to start by, first of all, introducing you to Rachel. She's become a friend and a compatriot, and I'm very happy to have published her book. And I wanted to give you a chance, Rachel, to introduce yourself by maybe talking to us about how you discovered this phenomena of reality shifting in your own life, and maybe give us a little bit of a sense of how you've used it over time in creating the life of your dreams.
Hi. Okay, thank you. And thank you all for anyone who's here listening to this talk about my book and journaling. And Jeff, thank you very much for encouraging me to write it and for publishing it. And I'm so humbled and honored to share these techniques and something I've been passionate about for a long time, which is journaling. So to answer your question, I started journaling when I was about, well, a little girl. I think we called it a diary back then. And it was sort of a record of what we did during the day. But by the time I was late teen, early 20s, I had realized that there was something to taking what I felt on the inside and putting it on paper. And that started mostly in the way of goals lists. I talk about this in my book. I had grand plans and dreams for where my life was going to go after graduating from high school. And then I got into a bit of trouble and that all collapsed quickly. And so this fairy tale, like traipsing through Europe, backpacking, eating croissants in France, living in Italy, it went away very quickly. And I was standing in pretty much nothing, just a very blank future that was not compelling. So I started the first time I remember journaling in a way that changed my future, although of course I didn't know it in the moment. I sat down and I did an intense journal technique, sorry, goals list manifesting. Sorry, that's not what we called it back then. Just a goals list, a master goals list. And so the way the technique went back then is I wrote down my goals for, I set a timer, 10 minutes. Then I maybe put those goals in order for 10 minutes. And then the last part, this is what takes me into the future. I spent 10 additional minutes writing down what my life would look like and feel like, what it would feel like to live in those goals as they were accomplished. And so I did that. And that year turned out pretty okay after I wrote my goals down. And I did that every year after. And I did things that were so beyond the realm of what a little girl from a little town in Texas could imagine. And I think it's because the magical, it felt like magical thinking when I wrote down my goals back then. And but then at the end of the year, I'd look back and I'd say, wow, a lot of that happened. Or 3 years later, the things that hadn't happened on the first year, in the first year, I'd look back and I'd say, wow, I got that car. Amazing. I got that experience. I got to meet that person. If it was maybe I was into Yanni's music, I met Yanni. It's like things like that happened. And you look back over time and you say, wow, it seems like everything that I wrote down on the list of goals that I wanted for myself happened. And so from there, I was pretty hooked on goals setting and writing them down. There was just something about writing them down that compelled me to dream big and can like move in a direction. I'd write something down and then I'd move in that direction. But I didn't go back and look at it until the next year or 2 years later. I didn't check the soup as I was going. So I'm kind of stalling out, Jeff. What else should I say?
That's okay. I want to ask something about this. So
Okay.
the technique you did first was you wrote you roughly what you just said is you took spent 10 minutes writing down your goals for the year. You spent 10 minutes prioritizing them in some order, and then you spent 10 minutes imagining what your life would be like with these goals fulfilled.
Yes.
And so when I was introducing our time together today, I was saying, you know what? So the as I see it, you have these techniques and the listing the goals for you for the year as a technique. The power of the technique isn't in the technique itself. I mean, you could have 1,000 people write down their goals for the year, and you wouldn't necessarily expect that all 1,000 people would have all those goals.
Correct.
That's why I really encouraged Rachel to write this book, because at least from what I could see, her goals seem to happen every year. And this idea of reality shifting. So let's say 10% of the power is in the technique. 90% of the power is in how you enact the technique. And I happen to know from conversations with Rachel, she's been very inspired by, for instance, Neville Goddard, who's one of the earliest people to write about this way of being. And he wrote a short book called Feeling is the Secret, because what he was saying was, what makes it real is you have to fully embody in a sensual sense. You have to fully embody the feeling of what he, the way Neville Goddard would talk about it, you're the wish fulfilled. You have to embody that, the fulfillment. You have to feel the reality of the fulfillment. And somehow that's where the magic is. That's what allows this to become more than just wishful thinking, because wishful thinking won't get you much, but it becomes more than wishful thinking when you start to allow yourself to feel the embodiment of it. So I would love to hear you speak about that dimension of this, Rachel.
Okay. In the book, I talk about a technique where you and I'm going to skip from the goals list for just a minute, and I'm going to go to another technique that's very simple to use every single day. So feeling the embodiment of something. So sometimes, many times, I'll wake up and have a lot of things to do, from clerical to just things I want to do to things that if I when I do them, they're consistent with the life that I'm creating and living. But I'm not always compelled to do those things. And sometimes I just don't want to. Sometimes I just want to sit down and read or walk on the beach or go for a walk or visit with my friend or chat on the phone with my sister. But if I spend my day just whiling my time away, I won't be living consistent and it'll just be more piles up tomorrow, consistent with what I'm committed to, and more will pile up tomorrow for me to have to take on tomorrow. So I have a technique that I learned from Abraham Hicks and their book Ask and It Is Given. And that technique is where you basically you make a to-do list. And on one side, you say, this is what I'm going to do. And on the other side, you say, this is how I'm committed. This is how I would like for it to go. This would compel me to get it done. I'm going to land the plane with what you said, Jeff. I promise I'm coming to it. But so when you make your to-do list of what you're committed to and up to in the world, what you have to do from returning Amazon packages, which we all have to from time to time, and grocery shopping and cooking and, you know, making the phone calls and putting gas in your car, whatever it is that you're up to, the exercise you need to do. But then if you get present to what would inspire you if it felt that way? If I worked out today, and I hit a really good workout at the gym or in my yoga class or making my walk, and it felt free and fun. And I'm at the gym, and the weights are all available when I want them. And the exercise is intense, but for me, not overwhelming. And I get in and out very quickly. If I write that down, then that is now compelling to me, but it's also giving me what it is that I'm, how it is I'm committed to having that experience go. And for me, when I do that with each and everything on my list and each and every part of my day, or if the list is bigger than just for today, for the week, then I'll wind up when I turn myself onto autopilot and just take those things on, inevitably, because I've felt through how I want it to go. I've thought through with words on page how I want that experience to show up and live inside of me. Inevitably, it does. It's like just telling myself how to get there, putting it in words, putting it on paper, putting the paper away fulfills that. It's like I tune into that for myself.
Beautiful. When I first read Neville Goddard, and it's something about what he said made sense of a lot of my experience of my own life. You know, although I didn't have that language, I could see, oh, how many times I was living that kind of embodied future. And then it happens. And so one of the things I saw is that I had a desire to be able to spend more time in Portugal. My heritage is Portuguese. I wanted to create the opportunity to spend more time there. I enjoy being there. And so I started a practice, which was, I live in New Jersey, so I went to a little neighborhood called the Ironbound in Newark. And in Newark, New Jersey, it's a very Portuguese area. So I bought these little Portuguese espresso cups that had come from Portugal. And every morning when I had coffee, I had them in the little cup. And I just felt myself being in Portugal while I was drinking my coffee. And, you know, one thing after another happened. And some of it was just me actually getting things done. Some of it was coincidence, the right person landing in your life at the right moment. And now it's, you know, some years later, I'm still drinking out of those coffee cups, and but I'm now I now have a Portuguese citizenship, and I'm able to spend any amount of time I want there. And I'm aware that that little ritual of drinking that coffee every morning with the intention of feeling that I was in Portugal drinking it had some kind of a big influence over how things unfolded. You know, so I became a real believer because that was the first time I had ever consciously done something using that kind of technique. And it's I'm still doing it, and it's still unfolding. So I'm not giving up yet. And I'm wondering, Rachel, do you have an example? I know you have so many stories. Do you have an example similarly of something that you were embodying as a potential reality that then happened, that then showed up as a reality in your life?
Yes, let me get a good one. I have so many. In my early 20s, I had a real desire to have a car as a status symbol. I think a lot of us had that at one point in their life, like the status of a car meant a lot. And I thought it would be really fun. My neighbor growing up had had a red convertible Spider, and it was almost never worked, sat in their driveway all the time. But in my mind, it was the coolest, neatest thing ever. So I imagined myself having a car like that one and a red Spider. That's what I thought, a red convertible, two-door, small sports car, sort of a not a modern edgy car, more of a sort of an old vintage looking car. And I pictured it a lot, and I thought, wow, when I will have made it when I get this car, when I get a car like this. But I have a real hesitancy to shop for cars. I'm not a car shopper. Just going to a car lot is a big turn off to me. I don't like thinking about cars. I don't like the price tag of cars. I don't like much about it, except I do like having them. So my husband at the time, I'd never shared that with him at all, never shared that with anybody. It was just a deep desire inside of me. And it was, of course, on one of my goals list to have a red, shiny sports car convertible. And I come home and he said, "You're not going to believe what I did today." And I said, "What did you do?" He said, "I bought a car on Craigslist." I was like, "What are you talking about? You bought a car on Craigslist?" This is back when Craigslist was a big thing. It's maybe our Facebook marketplace now. And he said, "Yes." I lived in Texas at the time. And he said, "It's in Houston. I'm gonna go pick it up tomorrow." And I was like, "Well, what if it doesn't work? What do you mean you bought? I still couldn't even get my head around it." So, anyways, he shows me a picture of it, and guess what it is? It's a red Porsche Boxster that was a convertible, and that's it. That's a two-door small Porsche, and it looked exactly like the car that I'd always been imagining—the red convertible that I'd written down on my dreams list. Now, I never, or my goals list, I'd never said that with anybody. I'd never shared it, but I did have this vivid dream of me driving down. I wanted to have some red leather jeans, you know, and have like a white blouse. I just had a vivid picture, a scarf in my hair, like a movie star from the 50s, you know, or 60s. And sure enough, I got the car, I found the red leather jeans, and I did wear a scarf in my hair, my big glasses on.
That's very fun. So I guess the thing that I would really want to continue to explore is, why does this work? And there can be, there's a lot of different people who write about this. Abraham Hicks, Rachel mentioned, Neville Goddard wrote about it. There's a guy currently, Vadim Zeland, I think is his name. He's a Russian and he's getting quite popular for ideas like this. And Vadim Zeland, he was a quantum physicist in Russia, and he has a whole quantum theory around why this works involving multiple realities. Neville Goddard used to talk a lot about the imagination. When you tap into the depths of your imagination, you're tapping into what is the divine, what is God, what you're tapping into a source of all power. Neville Goddard also talked about alternate timelines running through the fourth dimension, and how that was a popular idea at the time. So there's different theories that people use. But what you find, or what I have found in this exploration, is that although the theories about why this works, whether it's the imagination of God or the fourth dimension or the multiple universes of quantum theory, those are all the explanations. But the actual key to it working, the feeling is the secret element, is the same with everything I have found. And it all involves somehow tapping into a state of consciousness, which I have most, the phrase I like most for it is betweenness. Neville Goddard talked about it as being similar to the hypnagogic state. So he would always do these kind of exercises in a state where he was kind of half awake, half asleep, in that sort of dreamy mind place. Other people talk about this as a way of entering into your subconscious and implanting intentions in your subconscious. So I have been very fascinated for my whole spiritual life, the last 30 years, with this state, even though I didn't know anything about reality shifting. But I knew that it was the place where spiritual magic happens. I knew that in my practice of meditation, there's this twilight mind state where all the big breakthroughs in my life initiated from. And Neville Goddard at some point talks about how, of course, and a lot of people who talk about reality shifting, they're talking about it more in terms of material acquisition or getting getting the right relationship or the right job, et cetera, which is wonderful. And, I'm finding it works well for living part of your life in Portugal, if that's what you want. But Neville Goddard, in one of his books, talks about how, well, the highest use of this would be for your spiritual awakening. And he had a big awakening experience that he initiated through this kind of technique, where he had a recognition of his life's, his the purpose of his life, the divine purpose of his life, that was very inspiring to him. So Rachel, I would love to talk to you about any thoughts you have regarding the state of consciousness that allows this magic, seeming magic, to take place.
Okay, I like that. So one thing that I've been able to put words around is I have a bit of it, and it's I say it a little tongue in cheek, but I do mean it. It's a little superstitious for me. And what I mean by that is I know that I have a belief about this that can't be really based in reality, but the way I relate to it is if it's true. So when I write something in my journal, I keep it very private. I don't share what I'm up to with really anyone. If I share what I'm up to with somebody, the person has to be a neutral bystander, meaning I don't want them to clap or cheer for me or give me like a dopamine hit. That's a great idea. I love that. You can do that. And I don't want them to say, that's too big. You could never get that. That's too, nobody can remain in a place of peace all the time. Life interacts. People cut you off in the road, you know, whatever it is that I'm up to. I don't share it because I have a superstition that the energy around me that's pulling me towards the life that I want, or maybe pulling the life that I'm committed to towards me, can be disrupted by the people's impression and or imprint on it, or they influence it with their experience of what I say or what I'm up to. So that's one thing, is I keep my journaling very private to myself. And then another thing that I think is very key with it is even though I do vivid words and a deep imagining and writing of what the manifestation looks like, how it feels in the future or in the future now when it happens, I release it. Like I'll be very present in the moment, but beyond the feelings of joy, gratitude, peace, love, appreciation, authenticity that I feel with whatever it is that I'm journaling about or up to in my life, I just let it go. So it's like I have the intention and then I release it into the world. So those two things, I don't share and then I release it.
Well, that's great. And this that second one is also one that I'm aware almost everyone who writes about these things talks about, which is you set this intention deeply and then you forget about it. Naturally, you will end up doing things that forward that movement, but you're actually trying not to be sort of self-conscious about it. You're trying not to use that goal that you set as a reference point that you then act in accordance with. You set it very deeply and you just know that it will happen. And I think that's part of it is this just complete faith in the initial intention that was set, which I think is what you're saying also. So you have a technique in your book. It's called the "Wouldn't it be nice" technique, which I found very, when you explained that one to me, I thought it was very interesting because usually I think of these things as you don't say "Wouldn't it be nice?" You say "It is." You'd be very assertive, and you were saying, well, there's sometimes where you can't authentically have that kind of clarity. And so you can use a technique called "Wouldn't it be nice if," and it moves you in that direction. Now, I think you had an experience getting to the airport with that particular technique that you told me about that I just found delightful and fascinating. And I was just wanting to coach you into telling us about that experience.
Okay. So years ago, I was in Colorado and we were memorializing my father. I was very pregnant with my son, who's now 14. So it's been a minute since this happened. But we were in Durango, Colorado, my husband, my toddler, and myself. And we spent the night. We had a wonderful family time and some very funny things to share about, you know, memorializing my father. Funny, fun memories for me. But that's, so the next morning we're getting ready to leave. We have a rental car and we pack up ready to go. We have all the kids' car seats and, you know, all the things you have when you have a little kid floating in your life. It's more things you can ever imagine. Diaper bags, diapers and bottles and the things. We start looking for the keys to the car. We can't find them anywhere. We are just looking. We can't. They're not in our luggage. We didn't accidentally pack them. And you know, this was before COVID, so it was still $200 a ticket to change. If anybody remembers back in the day when you wanted to change your airplane ticket, it was very expensive. And the cost was a great consideration, but also my husband needed to be back for work. So we really couldn't miss one of the only flights out of Durango that was going to get us to New Jersey that day. We couldn't find a way in ourselves to make that a settled decision. So we are tearing the place apart. We decide that my daughter, well, we actually think we might have left them in the boot of the car. We think they might be in the trunk. Maybe when we got our things out, we accidentally put them down. So we call a locksmith, and with great luck, we get one quickly, which very unusual, I think. That was wonderful luck. The locksmith comes, he opens the car for us, and there are no keys anywhere. Now we have literally taken the sheets off the bed. We have turned this small hotel room upside down. And I go back inside and I'm just trying not to panic. I'm just pushing down the panic, this great expense, you know, $600 just to change the tickets, the rental car the next day, having another hotel room. Just the cost seems so overwhelming. The cost of time seems overwhelming. And I just am like breathing. And then I remember this technique and I just start saying, I'm like, okay, wouldn't it be nice if I can't say, wouldn't it be nice if we find the keys because it's just so emotional. Like I can't, I mean, that's desperate. That felt desperate. So I was like, okay, wouldn't it be nice if this is funny sometime in the future? Wouldn't it be nice if we actually make our flight? Wouldn't it be nice if we all feel connected to each other? Wouldn't it be nice if, and I just started saying, wouldn't it be nice if, wouldn't it be nice if, wouldn't it be nice if I thought of another place to look for the keys? So as all of this comes, I'm just like, I remember it very vividly. It's almost like an out-of-body experience. I get down, we've already taken the sleeper sofa bed, which we had left closed. You know, we'd taken the pillows off, we'd looked everywhere. But I look again and I almost go directly to the keys. They have fallen. The sleeper sofa would have pulled out. So there's rigging in between the side panel of the sofa and the mattress that pulls out. And the keys had fallen in there and were hooked on the rigging of this mattress. And so I get the keys and then the entire thing just unfolds. We jump into the car. The locksmith, who's still outside talking to my husband, is like, no, don't pay me, just go. So we jump in the car. We get to the airport. I thought to call the rental car company on the way. It's Durango. So, you know, 14 years ago, especially, it was a small airport. And I explained to them we're very late. I even probably told them the story. We've lost the car keys. We found them. And they're like, just bring it right up, to ticketing and we'll come out to meet you. So you don't need to return the car. So we rush. We do it like the run through the airport, and you know, we're the last people on the plane, but we made it. And in fact, we do laugh about it to this day.
And I love the fact that, when I think this is, I think there's two things about that story that are worth pointing out. One is that you were using this technique, wouldn't it be nice if, and you weren't going directly at find, wouldn't it be nice if we found the keys? You were doing all of these kind of tangential things. Wouldn't it be nice if we were all happy? Wouldn't it be nice if we were all laughing about this? Wouldn't it be nice if we made our plane on time? So there was a certain way in which you were really feeling all of the positive aspects of finding the keys without actually mentioning the finding the keys. And the other thing is when you said you had this almost out of body experience, which I think is very much connected to that hypnagogic state, because that is also the state where one has out of body experiences. And there is something about, well, in your case, this it was the result of pressure. You know, Abraham Maslow, who developed the hierarchy of needs. Toward the end of his life, his main fascination was with peak experiences. And he started a friendship with an English author named Colin Wilson, who was also very into peak experiences. And the idea was, in these peak experiences, you tap into a whole other level of consciousness, and things become possible that wouldn't be possible otherwise. And that's a whole science that's fascinating. But I think there's some relationship between the consciousness of this hypnagogic state, the consciousness of the peak experience, which is often initiated with tr stress, the way that you were experiencing stress, and the ignition of what seems like superhuman capacities, like the way that you said, you did this, wouldn't it be nice if? And then, even though you had turned this place upside down multiple times, you seemed to go straight to where the keys were dangling on this mesh, you know, in between the cushions, that I'm sure you were looking all around there before. But I think there's something really worth considering, you know, that there are ways of tapping into much deeper and more profound human capacities than we are aware of. See, we become anesthetized because we are conditioned to believe in a certain line that marks what is and what is not possible for human beings. And when, you know, the wonderful thing about this kind of reality shifting, besides the fact that you can find your keys when you've lost them and you need to get home, I mean, that's a great thing. But much bigger than that is you start to realize, oh, there's a lot more that there's a, I have a lot more capacity to do things, to enact change in the world than what I've been told. Nobody told, well, in this case, Esther Hicks did tell you, but generally speaking, nobody tells you that you can use a technique like, wouldn't it be nice if? And kind of miraculously find the keys that you desperately need in the moment that you desperately need them. And I think the great insight that I wish that we would all move forward with is the insight that inside us, we have capacities that we can't even imagine, that can be unlocked through accessing the right level of consciousness. So yeah, that's what that story tells me, you know. And I'll just add, my mom, who passed a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, she was well known in my family, at least. She was well known because she had a very close, she's very Christian. She had a very close relationship with whoever is the saint of lost items. And I don't remember who that is. I think it's Saint Christopher. But she had a very close relationship with Saint Christopher. She was in daily dialogue with Saint Christopher. You know, I never gave this much thought, but I know my sister would use her all the time. She'd say, Mom, in this case, I lost my keys. Can you ask Saint Christopher where they are? And my mom would call back in about an hour and say, did you check under such and such, or did you check in such and such a drawer? And with uncanny accuracy, it would turn out to be true. So I think all these things are related. I think for whatever reason, through prayer, my mom found access to that same space and consciousness that Rachel got popped into when she found her keys. You know, I really want to encourage all of us to practice these reality shifting techniques, not just to create the life of our dreams, although that is a fantastic outcome, but also so that we can explore and discover our higher human capacities. So yes, Rachel, if you have anything to say about that, I would invite that. And then I think you were going to take us through one of your journaling exercises.
So I don't really have any. That was so brilliantly said. I will. This is one thing that did strike me. One, wouldn't it be nice if that I like to add, circling back a little bit, when I wake up and I'm very stressed, inevitably everyone has woken up and didn't have as much time as they wanted to. I think, wouldn't it be nice if that I like to say is, wouldn't it be nice if time expands this morning and I have more time than I need, or this afternoon, or on my way? Wouldn't it be nice if, many people have the belief, my mother, like your mother with St. Christopher, my mother has like this direct channel to God about traffic. So she says, if you're going somewhere and need to get there and there's going to be a lot of traffic, just let me know and I'll pray about it and the traffic will just open up for you. And she's, at least when she's with me, she's very good at it. So I love that. But yeah, so that's a really good one. That what did you say? The hypnagogic, what's the word, Jeff?
That's it. That was it. Hypnagogic.
Hypnagogic state. I love that. And I feel like that's neat to be present to when you can access that. So, wouldn't it be nice if time just expands and I have all the time that I need? Wouldn't it be nice if my resources expand and I have enough for everyone around me to have this experience or to enjoy this event, you know? So, I love that. But yeah, you want to do an ex you want to do a so
I would love to do one.
okay, great. So if everybody could take a moment, if you'd like to join in with us, that would be fun to all do it together. Find a place, and you can use a page in your journal if you have one with you, or you can use any paper that you can get your hand on, notepad or the back of an envelope I've used many times. This isn't The results are pretty fun, but this isn't something you need to memorialize. It's just an exercise in how well journaling can work in your life when you use it. So what I want you to do, we're going to do the technique that we just talked about, where you take a piece of paper, and I'd like for you, we're going to do the technique where we have a list of things that we need to accomplish. It could be today, or it could be this week's tech things, or anything. It could be for your year. It doesn't matter. But if you could do, think from your mind for just a minute, things that you need to do. Actually, let's not say the year, because I think the magic is in having it done close enough that you can be present to the outcome. So take your paper. We're going to write down the middle. I'm going to do the landscape side of this paper. And on one side, I'm going to write me. And then on the other side, I'm going to put UM. And depending on your beliefs, to me, the mystical reality behind this shows up like it's God, but it's also, quite frankly, probably your unconscious mind, or as I've heard it, the universal manager who helps you manage your life. But I want you to write me and UM at the top of each column, something like this. And then on the me side, I'd like you to make a short list of 5 to 7 things that you need to get accomplished. You have given yourself that responsibility, or just based on what you're up to in the world, those responsibilities fall on you. But write those down, and I'm going to be quiet for a minute while you take a couple of, like 2 minutes, and write those down. So when you get several things on your to-do list, maybe fill up the column. Oh, I didn't say this, and I'm sorry I didn't say this. Leave a little space between each one, because the other side underneath the UM, or the unconscious mind, is going to be where you're going to write a brief description about how you want those things to go. So you could need to go to the grocery store. You might need to get your taxes together. You might need to call a friend, a sister, pay a bill, that pesky return something to Amazon, which seems to always need to happen around my house. Let's see. Maybe there's a book you've been meaning to read, open, start, finish. Perhaps there's, another obligation. Maybe you've got something in your life that you're up to, like creating donations around, something that you're committed to. So just write that list of me. And then when you get several, we're going to go ahead and come over to the other side of the UM. And the first thing that I have over here on mine is international procedures. I have a training that I'm required to do. It's timed, it's 8 hours. And I resist it just because it's information I'm quite familiar with. And it's a little dry. But at the end of each small section, there's a quiz that I have to take. And then at the end, there's a major test. And then those results are stored with my company and the FAA. So it's something as a pilot I have to do every year. So I wrote down international procedures and I'm going to come over to the UM side. I'm going to take this task, which is usually quite dry and perhaps uninteresting for the most part. And I'm going to write how I want it to go for myself. And how I want it to go is I want time to fly by because it's an 8 hours timed program. I want the internet connection. I'm still in Jamaica. I want the internet connection to be smooth and fast. I want to make 100% on all of the quizzes and tests. And I want to learn three new things that genuinely interest me and that I need to know. Remember, I've done this like 15 times for 15 years. So three new things that genuinely interest me and I need to know. Okay, then I'm going to take another one, and that's going to be dinner with my crew. So dinner with my crew is fun, but also, staying in and doing international procedures or painting or talking on the phone with my husband. There's plenty of other fun things too. So sometimes it shows up more as an obligation than as an opportunity. So I'm going to come over here to the unconscious mind side, and I'm going to write what I want dinner with my crew to go like. Okay. So for me, I'm just going to give you this example and one more just to give you an idea. So I'm going to say simply the time is enjoyable. The dinner goes quickly. So it's enjoyable, but it goes quickly. It doesn't show up as it drags on through the whole evening. It's fun. I'm present. I'm light and easy to be with. And I feel connected. So now that I've put two of these, I'm going to be quiet for just a minute so you can do one or two, and then I'll do one more and read to you what I've written. If do you have one you want to share? You don't have to.
Who are you asking?
You. Do you have one?
Oh, okay.
You don't have to.
No, I'm happy to. So one of the ones I had is I need to read one of my books this weekend for a class that I'm teaching. So I put that. I'm going to read this book. And then on the UM side, I put, while I'm reading, I am completely captivated by the book and and pleasantly surprised by how good it actually is.
That's great. That's great. I love that. Does anyone else have one they want to share? It's okay if you don't.
I think mirrors,
Mirk,
yes.
yeah, my sorry, Heather
Mirk.
didn't come on. There you got half the last name. One, I
Okay.
wanted to say, thank you. I'm really appreciating this. It makes so much sense, and I've just never thought to do it, and it's so simple yet so powerful. So thank you. And mine is I have to prepare this first aid course today, and I want to feel calm. I want to make decisions without questioning them and feeling like I made a decision moving forward, and it feels enjoyable to do. And it goes quickly.
Perfect. That's great. I love it. Does anyone else have one more to share? So when you and it's okay if you don't, I'll just talk a little bit about this. So when I do this technique, and I do this one very often, when I do this technique, what I notice is that I can take a very mundane day, a mundane part of just going through life, and I can turn it into something that inspires me, that's fun, that's full of whimsy if I'm up to that, or authenticity if that's what I'm into today. I can be present and available, but instead of being a reaction or going through my life like I'm in a ping pong ball machine and I'm just bouncing off everything that happens, I literally have a map. And ultimately, when I make each day move in the direction that I'm committed to, each of my small lists, whether it's have dinner with my husband or have a family dinner or sit down and write my journal book or paint a painting that I intend to, donate to a worthy cause or something. So whatever it is that I'm up to, I know that as I am orchestrating how it goes for me emotionally, I am not reacting to how life goes, like the car in front of me that's going slower than I want to drive, or the check that takes longer to get because I'm already ready to go back and take on the next thing, or the hotel bill that they're charging me twice for my room, whatever it is. I'm not a pinball reacting emotionally. I'm saying how I'm going to go. And when I declare it, ultimately, for the most part, it goes that way. And I think that's pretty magic. Little bites towards the ultimate goal of having a life that's peaceful, fulfilling, contributory to other people and other things, and inspired by the divine so that I am ultimately just happy and, oh, happy. More than
Beautiful.
happy.
That's fantastic. Marilyn has her hand up, so I'm going to unmute her so she can. I'm not sure what she's going to share with us, but here she is.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
We'll all discover together then.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if, see, I live in an area where there's going to be extremely noisy motorcycles coming, hundreds of thousands of them, and my ears are sensitive to noise. That's just background. Okay, so wouldn't it be nice if, and I'm also needing little odd jobs, to make money. So wouldn't it be nice if I got a pet sitting job with an adorable dog and a peaceful place way away from the motorcycles? Is so I'm thinking this might be too complicated. I need to take like steps or something.
That's
And then
great.
I think, oh my God, I don't want to go out and try to market myself or anything. That's not my thing I want to do. Anyway, if you have any comments.
I do. So wouldn't it be nice if it's great? I would say, if it were me, I would say, wouldn't it be nice if, when is this happening, the motorcycle rally that you'd rather not be around?
5 days from now it starts.
Now, wouldn't it be nice if the middle of next week I am pet sitting an adorable little fluffy pet? Wouldn't it be nice if I find myself so calm and peaceful next week? I'm inspired by the divine, like I just feel it inside of me. Wouldn't it be nice if these opportunities arise, just come straight into my path? Wouldn't it be nice if someone gets in touch with me and asks me if I can help them out, and this is the way I can do it?
Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome. Somebody else, I see a hand up, but I don't know Zoom very well to know how to.
No, there's a question that came in the chat, and it's from Liliana, and she asks if you prefer handwriting or is typing okay?
Handwriting every time. There's a lot of people talk about this. I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people are very into living completely on their phone. Everything is in their notes. Everything is just typed. You sit down to take a meeting or listen to a class, it's all going on a keyboard or through your phone. That's great for archiving it. But handwriting, pen on paper, there's something to me that just goes straight into the ways of being and the. It's almost like it's like writing, talking to God, writing into the divine, like going straight into yourself. If I make a, and this is a perfect example, if I make a grocery list on my phone, I have to refer to it multiple times in the grocery store, maybe before I go in to, as I'm checking out. If I write a grocery list in the morning in my journal, I'll get everything on the list and not even ever refer to it again. I know that's a big leap, but there's just something about how that goes straight into you when you write with your hand. So please write on paper with your pen or pencil.
Okay, and Nina has her hand up, so I'm going to ask
Ask
her
her
to
to
unmute.
unmute.
Hi. I'm looking at the time and maybe this question is too long, but I'll
No,
give it a
go
go.
ahead.
So I've done this, like everything that I've looked at before is kind of coming together and you've presented it so beautifully, Rachel. But I kind of stopped doing it because I found I was creating things that were complicating my life.
Oh, nice.
So for instance, when I did this right now, I've got a dog that needs to have a dental. And I was like, wouldn't it be nice if it could happen next week? And when I've done this kind of thing in the past, it's worked out. And then I've been like, oh, that actually doesn't work. Right. So I'm concerned about how you decide what you want to ask for, I guess, is my question.
Okay, I love
Yeah.
that. It's a good
Good
question.
question.
So
So
what
what
I
I
find,
find.
does anybody else have a that?
I'll switch
Maybe,
my.
yeah, Nina, that's great. Yeah.
Okay, great. So what I find is that being specific is very good, but you're right, you can get things that you didn't that wind up being complicated. So when we were doing the dog walking experience, I talked about being someplace else, having it work out, having the experience of being calm, having the experience of contribution to someone else. Because I find when I just say, oh, wouldn't it be nice if, or write in another way, in another technique in my journal, and then it comes to happen, maybe it isn't exactly what I'm up to. So I've gotten better at curating the words around the experience and how I want that to show up for me. And then the other thing that I do when I've asked for something and it doesn't come through exactly the way that I want, I just try to step back and say, everything always, this is Neville Goddard, everything always works out for me. Everything that happens to me is happening for my best interest. So even though this may not be the exact way that I thought it was going to look or feel the way that I thought it was going to feel, it's still in my best interest. So I think that's time.
Thank you, that's helpful.
Well,
Okay.
that's a great question. And it does make me think that when we're, because I think what Nina's talking about is, we can ask for something and then find that, oh, that has unanticipated negative consequences that I wasn't anticipating. So I love often the way I've heard you talk about this, Rachel. You're like, even with Marilyn, when she was asking about the motorcycle, rather than, because you Yeah, anyway, you could say, oh, wouldn't it be nice if the motorcycle rally got canceled? No, but
Yay.
you tend to word things like, wouldn't it be nice if next week I was, like you said, inspired by the divine, if next week I was happy? Or what popped into my head is, wouldn't it be nice if next week I realized the motorcycle was rally was happening and I was hardly noticing it? So you often will word things around what you want the experience to be rather than the actual thing that's happening. Wouldn't it be nice if my dog had their dental work done and it fit in perfectly with everything else in my life? So you kind of I've noticed over time, Rachel, that you sort of take care of those potential negative consequences in the way that you word your affirmations.
Yeah, I try to think through this. I know we're a little over time, but I'll tell you a very funny story. So most everything that's in the book that I wrote is something that either happened to me, or a real replication of something that I'm wanting. But when I wrote my goals list in the book, it was so personal. And again, I'm a little superstitious about that. So I took my goals out and just generated sort of a random goal list and put it in the book. But one of the things was get a house in Colorado or get a home in Colorado. And ultimately, that really wasn't my goal for this year, but it was people can want a vacation house or a house in Portugal, right? So my husband calls me and he says, "Honey, I got you a place in Colorado." Now, he's never read this goals list or even this book, but he said, "I got you a place in Colorado." He says, "Got a beautiful view." What he bought was a Sealand container and he cut a door in it and he put a cot in there and he put panels on the top so we have electricity. And he says, "We have a place that when we get to Colorado, we can just stay before we go camping and we can keep all of our gear here." I thought it was really funny because it's not at all what I wanted. But
You have to be careful what you write in your goal book.
I have a house now in Colorado. I have sealing containers.
That's funny. Well, with that, I'm going to just say, the book is Realize Your Dreams Through Journaling, and it has six techniques in it, including the a description of the Wouldn't It Be Nice and making your goals for the year. It has a number of just anecdotes from Rachel's life about how she's used these different techniques that help illustrate their value. So if you are, wanting to explore these kind of journaling techniques, I definitely would recommend her book. I'm also in an ongoing conversation with Rachel about doing producing an online program where she can teach some of these techniques. So I thought I'd mention that publicly to help foster that possibility closer to reality, because I think the opportunity to work with these and similar techniques and to develop, deepen the consciousness and the attitude and the orientation that makes them work would just be a wonderful opportunity. So again, I want to thank all of you for coming. I really want to thank Rachel for writing the book and also for being here. I see Ruth raised her hand, so I'm going to let her have some last word here, whatever it would be, before we f sign off completely. Yes, Ruth.
I kind of didn't mean to, but I'm just going to say I've been wondering, what does your t-shirt say? Oh,
Mine.
and
Oh, it's a.
Rachel, I love this, by the way. Okay, go ahead.
That's just a long quote from Edgar Allan Poe, which I won't read, but it's got a raven on it, so that tells you that it's Edgar Allan Poe.
Okay.
And yes, and you've been loving what we talked about, so that's awesome.
Yes.
And again, thank you all for coming. Thank you, Rachel, for everything you shared. It's been wonderful to talk to you, and I will let you have the last word as we sign off.
Well, thank you all so much for being here today. Jeff, thank you again for the opportunity and the motivation to write the book. And I just encourage you all to put pen to paper and just write the life that you want. It really, really can be yours. It doesn't need to be struggle. It can be peace and happiness and love.
Great. Thank you all so much. Much love to you all. Thanks, Joy D. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye bye.